how does a physician who is a pretty hard-nosed guy get to believing that these patients are actually leaving their bodies and going elsewhere?
You know, that's a great question, Art. As a doctor that treats cancer, I'm well known in the medical community as being very hard-nosed about evidence-based medicine. If you want to treat a patient a certain way, my question is, well, what's the evidence? So how could I come to believe in the truth and the reality of near-death experience? And that's interesting. Actually, Art, I first heard about near-death experience back in the early 1980s. I didn't hear it on the radio or TV because I was in training to be a radiation oncology physician, so I really didn't have time to do much of anything except eat, sleep, and study, basically.
Yeah.
And yet, when I was looking up an article pertinent to treating cancer patients in the Journal of the American Medical Association, one of the world's most prestigious medical journals, I found, to my amazement one day, an article entitled "The Near-Death Experiences," and I was immediately taken aback. I said, I've never heard about this in my residency training in medical school. What's this all about? So I read the article, and it was regarding near-death experiences and some of the early research that had gone on in the 1980s, and I was immediately amazed. I said, this is absolutely incredible. If this really happens, knowing what I know about medicine, there's absolutely no way that this could happen.
Dr. Long, was there a medical explanation proffered for, you know, the stories that were chronicled there? In other words, a hard-nosed medical... I mean, I've seen people on 2020 get up and, you know, doctors explain, look, it's the brain dying from the outside going in. Of course, they see a light and at the end of what appears to be a tunnel and that sort of thing because the brain tissues are dying. That's what I heard.
You know, let's talk about that specific example because that's often used. The theory that they tell you, Art, is that when you're dying, the brain's oxygen level gradually drops, and as a mm-hmm. consequence, especially when the blood level drops, as you would expect during the time when the heart stops, the blood flow to the retina, the portion of the eye responsible for vision, would gradually, the blood flow would gradually decrease, especially from the outside in, and that might result in the sensation of a light that would potentially a light that would actually gradually grow larger. The problem with physicians that advocate that point of view and other skeptics with similar arguments is that they're simply not talking to people that had a near-death experience. That's sort of trying to explain the tunnel experience of a near-death experience, the light that gets brighter and brighter as if you're going through a tunnel toward
the
light.
Yes.
But Art, when you talk to these people that have had a near-death experience, that's really not what they're describing. It's not at all unusual for near-death experiencers to describe tunnels where there's other beings with them. They're talking. They see multiple colors or patterns within the tunnel. They're moving very, very rapidly. There can be a whole host of other visual and even auditory stimuli during their travel down the tunnel. You know, even if the skeptics are correct that theoretically you could have a illusion of a light getting brighter and brighter, that has nothing to do with what the great majority of near-death experiencers describe.
Well, if we're really hard-nosed here, doctor, what percentage of people who come close to death or physically actually die on operating tables or at accident scenes and that sort of thing, what percentage actually report near-death experiences?
About 15 or 20% are that have a cardiac arrest, their heart stops, or if they stop breathing, will have a near-death experience. In the surveys, 1992 Gallup survey estimated that in the United States, about 13 million adults had experienced near-death experience, about 5% of the population.
Given that's a lot numerically, it's a bunch, but far from the even majority, so, you know, you've got to wonder about that a little bit.
Yeah, certainly with any medical phenomena or psychological or any kind of paranormal experiences, you almost never encounter a situation where everybody had a particular experience or everybody didn't. So I think it's far more startling that that number of people have had an experience like that than a majority didn't have an experience.
All right, well, let's talk about that number for a second. Of that number, doctor, how many commonalities are found in the stories they tell?
That's one of the most evidential things to me about near-death experience, is that unlike dreams or hallucinations or just random experiences that people might have, the pattern of near-death experience is very, very ordered. Of course, there's the associated life-threatening event. Their heart stops or they stop breathing.
Oh, yes.
After about 10 seconds of your heart not beating, blood no longer flows to the brain. Within about 10 seconds, if you measure an electroencephalogram, that's a measure of electrical activity in the brain, it goes to zero. These people are not capable of thinking, and yet at this time, they may have their consciousness apart from the body, very often above their body, looking down at their resuscitation efforts. This happens in about half the near-death experiences. They're able to hear and see what's going on down below them at a time they're clinically dead.
What could possibly, is there any medical explanation for people seeing the tools that were used to work on them, things that were said by nurses and doctors in those fleeting, incredible seconds? I mean, it's just impossible, isn't it?
With the detail they describe, we've had people describe the serial numbers on the machines that were used to resuscitate them. We've had people describe
Wow.
in detail, some clothes that are not aware. And as a physician, I have some special insights on this. Very often, the near-death experiencers describe, shall we say, unprofessional behavior while their resuscitation's going on. Unfortunately, it's often doctors yelling, cussing, equipment's not available, people are frantic, things don't go well during the resuscitation effort.
Right.
A lot of anxiety. That's not what you see on TV. That's not what you would think about happens.
Well, they couldn't put that on TV.
No, they could, yeah, but I mean...
No, they couldn't.
They can't.
HBO, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Sure. But the bottom line is, what I hear the near-death experiencers describe of their resuscitation efforts really smacks of reality to me. I mean, this is how things really happen in the real world. They go on in other parts of their near-death experience. They may even hear themselves being pronounced dead. The powerful emotions they feel, intense love and peace, going through a tunnel, which we talked about a little bit.
Okay, is there any way that you can explain medically how a patient could hear themselves pronounced dead? Is there anything that we could hang our hook on that would explain that?
No, if your heart has stopped, and doctors are very good at determining if there's no heartbeat, 10 seconds later, there is no brain electrical activity that can be measured at all, even by our most sensitive equipment. You cannot be thinking. You cannot have a conscious act. That's why these people are literally unconscious, as the name implies, no potential for even any kind of a conscious thought at all. And yet what they're describing is so vivid, so detailed,
mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely medically inexplicable.